Alexandre.
Thank you. So I'll discuss some facts that you know from observations about solar dynamo, in particular heliosismology, and Mike will continue on this. So this what shows here is probably the most important data set in solar dynamo theory. So the sunspot numbers that we observed for 400 years, and people are still doing drawings of sunspot to continue this important time series, because that's how we learn 11-year cycle, and we know about long-term variations. So the goal, the main goal of dynamo theory is probably to explain why the sun produces sunspots and what how to predict 11-year sunspot cycle. So we asked this question recently, Gene Parker, and I give microphone to Gene. What he says about this?
It's rapid progress. It's an exciting subject, and we understand many of the basic effects. But now let me go back in time just a little bit. What about sunspots? When I was getting out of school around 1950, I read a couple of articles about sunspots, and I thought, boy, this is really interesting. We ought to be able to knock this one off pretty quickly. Well, here we are. Let's see, brother, we're 57 years downstream, and I still cannot tell you why the sun is obliged by the basic laws of physics to produce spots. And this whole situation has been aggravated in my...
So that was, actually, it was a meeting to celebrate 100 years of discovery of solar magnetism, and solar magnetism was discovered by Hale on the sun, of course. So that what I think it was this actually discovery was 100 years and 2 weeks ago. So it's so now that we observe magnetic field, unfortunately, again, the regular observation of magnetic field happened only recently, and these all observations of solar magnetic fields up to date that we know. So that is a magnetic butterfly diagram. So that's what we observe, three solar cycles. That's what we know information about magnetic field. So here you can see butterfly diagram, here sunspots, two opposite polarities, and you can see regular reversal of magnetic polarities here. It happens also, so the total cycle is 22 years. And if you look carefully at this, you can see that what happens here, that solar activity is not uniform in time. If you compare with theoretical diagrams produced by dynamo theory, they're kind of uniform. And here you can see these surges of activity. And this is mostly produced by inhomogeneous distribution of centers of activity in longitude. It's completely ignored by dynamo theory, but I think it's quite important. This is called nests of solar activity. So the basic questions we want to answer for dynamo theory, how we can help with observations. Well, the first question is how deep is solar dynamo? And is a butterfly diagram, and what is the mechanism of magnetic flux transport to polar regions, and actually how we can get this observational data simulated into dynamo models and predict sunspot cycles. So that's, I think, the basic questions. So the techniques we have, it's called global heliosismology, when we try to measure normal mode frequencies from oscillations on the surface, and then deduce radial stratification, asphericity, and also rotation. That's how we know about the Tachac line. And the more recent technique is called time-distant heliosismology, or more recent name that was introduced in geophysics called ambient noise tomography, where we can measure actually travel times. We can cross-correlate random waves and measure the travel time. So that's cross-correlation diagram. And so that we can get some local measurements. We can measure local flows and image sunspots below the surface. How we can answer the first question, how deep the solar dynamo is? So there are several ways of doing this. So the first, you can compare, just we know rotation law inside the sun, and we compare with rotation of sunspots. Particularly, we can compare with complexes of solar activity. That's a place where magnetic field appears repeatedly for a very long time, for years, for several rotations. So that might be something fundamental. That's what Cornelius Van introduced this term, nest of sunspots. We can also study properties of emerging magnetic flux. If it appears from the bottom of the convection zone, we're supposed to figure out what properties we can measure of these. We can also try to detect roots of magnetic active regions just by directly imaging by this technique, heliosismic tomography. And we also can study Tachac line and its variation because it's a popular topic. And the first we compare just rotation rate, which is measured quite robust measurement from heliosismology. You can see the radial profile three different latitudes at equator, 15 degrees and 30 degrees. And here it's the bottom of the convection zone. Tucker line is here. And now we compare with rotation of sunspots, complex of solar activity. In particular, the complexes are very easy to see when sun is not very active at the end of activity cycle and the beginning, when most of the activity appears at particular longitudes. So here it's a rotation rate of it's called old cycle, where its magnetic field appears near the equator. And here it's a new flux, where magnetic field appears at 30 degrees latitude. Now we're trying to match where it can come from, because it appears repeatedly. If you don't match rotation rate, it will spread in longitudes. So it must something reflect the property of rotation. And if you look here, you can see that perhaps at the equatorial flux, you can match rotation of Tucker line or near the surface. But if you go to 30 degrees latitude, no match rotation of Tucker line at 30 degrees latitude. So this flux must appear somewhere from below the surface. I think if you think about this picture, then it eventually rules out this idea about solar dynamo and Tucker line. Well, nevertheless, Tucker line is a gold mine for theorists, so that's still a very popular topic. So that's what it's a strong evidence that solar dynamo is shallow. Yes. So the current paradigm is that we can look further at this topic. The paradigm is that magnetic field generating Tucker line and emerging from toroidal flux tubes. And first you need that magnetic flux, the magnetic field strengths are pretty strong. You need 50 kilogauss, 100 kilogauss, because otherwise the magnetic field will emerge. It will at latitudes higher than 30 degrees, where it's never observed. So it must be pretty strong, and then it can emerge radially. Otherwise, it will be deflected by Coriolis force. And also, that another property of emerging flux, that during the emergence, the magnetic flux tubes are tilted by also Coriolis force, and that's what observed as the Joyce law. This is interpretation. The Joyce law was also known for many years. So this illustration of emerging flux tube from the Tucker line. And that is a schematic how that Coriolis force works to deflect emerging flux. So that's an example of the Joyce law. It's known that if active region is located in northern hemisphere, then the leading polarity is closer to equator than the following polarity. That was established in 1990. That was also a paper by Hale. And they found that the tilt angle, it's a pure statistical effect. If you look at any active region, you don't see it. That it depends on latitude, the tilt angle. So some number of theories developed to explain this, in particular a theory of emerging flux tube. And it also can explain this latitudinal dependence, the tilt angle. But also, it shows that some dependence on magnetic flux. So the stronger magnetic flux, the stronger tilt according to the theory. So we decided to check this, and also some other ideas that what Bob Howard noticed, that the tilt actually doesn't disappear after the emergence, while Coriolis force should disappear because no motions anymore. And he suggested maybe it's a combination of meridional flows and differential rotation makes the tilt. So we decided to look at emerging magnetic flux. For the past solar cycle, we have magnetic field measurements every 96 minutes from SOHO MDI. So with Jan Stenflo, we took all these measurements and analyze, we look at active regions that emerged near the central meridian, plus minus 30 degrees near the central meridian. So that was more than 700 active regions. So that's an example of one of these on two different scales. So two opposite polarities. So it's a typical evolution of emerging bipolar active region. So then we just did automatic processing of these, measuring total flux, measuring tilt angle, as a tilt of center of gravity of two polarities and separation, so that all these example of data processing. And then we separate, you can see emerging phase where magnetic flux increases rapidly. So we divided this into five sub-intervals to look how they change during the emergence. So that during the first interval, we don't see the tilt angle, but there was not much magnetic flux also, pretty scattered. But already when almost about half of the flux appeared, it already tilted. So it's already a statistical relationship. And further, it still stays the same, and variance decreases. So it's at the end of emergence. So it tells us that actually the flux that emerged was already tilted. So it was not produced by motions at the surface as Howard suggested. But then we look at dependence on magnetic flux, and we don't see this. So there was no significant dependence on magnetic flux amount in this tilt angle. So this kind of contradicts to this prediction of emerging flux through from the bottom of the convection zone. So probably that's another problem with this theory that dynamo works in Tachac line. So then we can look at, actually try to image the roots of sunspots to see how deep the roots are. So that's what we've done with Tom Duval, and particularly show example of one big active region. It's October-November 2003, with a lot of solar activity at the time. So that's a movie of magnetogram, so you can see it's emerging active region, and also a lot of magnetic flux emerged in the same longitudinal region at the same time. Even in top, two hemispheres was opposite polarity, magnetic flux, but it was emerging simultaneously. So we look, we make images below the surface of this active region. So that's a map of this sound speed, the wave speed that we measure. Here the depth is 48 megameters. This plane, so that the surface is magnetogram. So you can see this active region that was before emergence, and new active region emerged in the middle here. So that's what we start seeing some signal below the surface. Sound speed, it increases, growing. And at the end, we can see, if you look at east-west direction, we can see some kind of part of omega loop. So we can see these two structures. Not very clear here. It's a lot of noise here at the depth of 40 megameters, so we're not sure that what's real here in the signal. But it looks like that the roots obviously goes somewhere at depth of 40 megameters, but we cannot trace to Tachac line yet, so we don't know. So it's another way to look at this emerging flux to see if some big structure is coming from below, because obviously it was one of the largest active regions observed in this solar cycle. So if it emerges, then it should put plasma away, obviously. So we should see some large-scale outflows. So that we also might make these flow maps. So you can see that supergranulation that's below two megameters below. And I showed just quickly, slideshow, you can see magnetic flux appears, and the structure of the flows changes. But we don't see large-scale outflows around active region. So we can see outflows locally when magnetic flux pushes material, but what nothing large-scale here. And at the end, so here you can also see the flux emergence that pushes material, so we can see outflows. And when sunspot already developed, it mostly generates inflows here. So that's the end of this development of this active region. And then we compared the divergence of this flux compared with the rate of flux emergence. And in fact, this here you can see this is the flux rate, the function of time. And here it's a divergence function of time. And in fact, divergence lags the flux emergence. So it's we don't see anything what would indicate what would expect from this picture of large omega loop emerging from the bottom of the convection zone. The next question is how we can predict the solar cycles. So that one answer is you can look at NASA prediction web page. So that's what prediction of the next solar cycle made in May 2007. And if you look now, that's a prediction now. So if you can see this, the cycle, the cycle becomes smaller. So another way to predict solar cycle is to use ensemble Kalman field, and I refer to poster by Irina Kityashvili. So it's prediction that what her prediction of the next solar cycle pretty small. And so what's the next? What future plans? The future plans, so that we're going to launch Solar Dynamics Observatory in about six, 7 months, and we'll provide an interrupted high resolution, high kindness vector magnetic data, heliosismic data, and coronal data. And that was the main goal, is actually to understand, to make these more images of sunspots, to find roots of sunspots, and to learn what as much as we can about solar dynamo and predict solar cycle. And now, of course, Gene Parker is retired, so we have a new generation of scientists.
There's one more thing. He wanted to do this at the beginning, but...
Not working. Okay, thank you. You can look at this movie at NASA website.
Sorry, I could follow some of the things. I couldn't follow the conclusions, like why, you know... Why can't you have a dynamo down at the bottom? I couldn't quite understand.
Well, there's
a scatter diagram that said this doesn't depend on flux, and therefore it has to be a shallow dynamo. I'm not sure.
No, I didn't say this. You know, I say that, you know, there are problems with. And the first problem that I think, you know, it's the simplest one, if you look at the evolution of complex solar activity, where several active regions emerge during an extended period of time, like a year, in the same place, okay? So if you assume that there is a source for these active regions below the surface, right, and try to match rotation rate of this complex activity with internal rotation rate, you don't get to Taha Klein. You can match only about 50 megameters below the surface. If you have... Yeah, no, if you think about this, you know, you can figure out that this is not possible. Because suppose you generate magnetic field, you know, it emerges from the bottom of the convection zone. It rotates with different rate.
Yeah.
So then you spread in longitude, your flux at the surface.
No, you seem to be confusing generation with anchoring.
What?
You seem to be confusing generation with anchoring. You know, it's perfectly...
No. If you think about also model with disconnection, it will be the same effect. No. You spread over longitude, no matter what you do. And some other problems, you know, if you look at that emerging flux, how it emerges at the tilt angle. So it must be at the bottom convection zone, the field must be pretty strong, because otherwise it will appear at high latitudes. It doesn't appear there. So then you calculate these models of flux emergence, and to find that the tilt angle, because it depends on Coriolis force, it depends on magnetic flux. Well, you know, that's what you can do this in the only model. Yeah, the only model I know you can do this, it was suggested by Babcock. It's just when you wrap around magnetic field lines, then you get exactly what is observed. And that's again below. What? Well, if you can suggest something, that would be very helpful. Then we can check probably in observations, because what I'm doing, I'm checking the theory that I know.
Okay, we have a question now from Valentina here.
Sasha.
No, yes, of course, yeah.
Sasha.
Well, you know, we can suggest better theory, you know, we'll be only happy.
Yeah. Valentina.
Sasha, about Joy's law, we done a work in 2006 on the tilts for the whole, all the sunspot groups, and we found Joy's law holds only for the sunspots which are within the royal zone. As soon as they move outside, if they start moving to polar, their actual latitudinal dependence completely different. It's published in journal in Advanced Space Research in 2006. So what can you say about this polar tilt?
Well, here now the Joy's law was also that, you know, the Joy, you know, studied, you know, thousands of sunspots. But here we didn't look at sunspots. We look at emerging flux only during the period of emergence. And of course, you know, the tilt angle evolves and it's pure statistical phenomenon. So it depends a lot of what how statistics he used. But here it's we look particularly at the emerging phase and not at sunspot, but at magnetic flux.
Okay, Axel.
To what extent can the the Joy's law, the tilt angle, be explained by the latitudinal shear, which would advect, of course, any emerging flux faster at lower latitudes than at high latitudes?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. Nobody calculated this. I think it was a suggestion that Bob Covert made this suggestion, because he realized that you cannot explain by Coriolis force, because it stays after the emergence. So that this series of Coriolis force tilt by Coriolis force, they're probably not correct. But I don't know this calculation.
So nothing obviously against that?
What?
Nothing obviously against that?
No, nothing against that, except that this shear must be somewhere below the surface, but because we can see tilt at the moment of emergence. So it's generated somewhere below the surface, not after magnetic field appeared and sheared.
Mm-hmm. Because in my 2005 simulations, I found that there was tilt completely independent of the direction of velocity.
Maybe
only dependent on shear.
Okay, I think that's it. Thank you very much.